I'm Chantal Oppelt.
And I'm Wissal Abrams. And this is Alchemy in Minutes. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Alchemy in Minutes. You're sitting with Wissal Abrams. I'm a global networker and storyteller, and I'm sitting across the table from Chantal Oppelt, industrial psychologist by trade and shaman by birth. Very excited to be here on our episode 5. And today we're going to be talking about the mysterious and necessary process of healing within leadership. Chantal, tell me. This healing process. How do you manage being in the business of healing?
Thank you, Sal. Great to be here with you. There are certain fundamentals that we've got to put on the table as a framework for this conversation. And part of the framework is that when I speak about healing, or as a shaman speaking about healing, it's a very different orientation to what the hype of healing is about. And so the big piece about the hype of healing is airy-fairy, and this is, it's a tricky conversation, right? Because already I'm feeling I've really got to choose my words very carefully.
Yes, don't slip now.
No, I can't slip. Yeah, we're walking on a precipice. And many that are in the healing modalities will also feel that. They'll feel that they on the precipice, and the work is really about not slipping. So in terms of the hype of healing, there's a piece around believing that the healing process is something that you switch on and off. As shaman and as an individual that is working with thought leaders, global thought leaders, the first place that we need to reorientate ourselves to is that our life is a journey of healing. Now, for some, they go, oh, no, we're talking about this again. Is this where we're going? But when we truly understand that the canvas and the fabric of our life is woven in a particular way, we get to understand that every piece of how life meets us and we meet life is about our healing journey. Some may not want to frame it like that. They may want to speak about other things within the context of their life. But for me, everything about how I engage with life and life engages with me is about the reclaiming of who I am. The pieces of myself that I have left in places. So whether through the experience of trauma, whether through choices that I've made or decisions that I've made, it's about the reclaiming of the pieces of myself. And so when I work with leaders across the world, the biggest piece that I've come to understand has challenged leaders is the parts of how they sleep at night. And it's the unspoken things. It's the things that leaders aren't able to speak to anybody about, because there's a perception of how they're meant to manage, lead, create the vision, implement the vision. So there's pieces about that conversation that they only take with them when they go to sleep at night. And the things that leaders are challenged by when they go to sleep at night are things that we wouldn't even consider. We wouldn't even consider as if that, we wouldn't consider that to be a conflict for them. And so I'm excited about having this conversation today. So healing for me is really about reclaiming the parts of who I am so that I step into the fullness of who I am in this lifetime.
You made me think now around this thing of having sleepless nights, you know, a symptom of a soul who's trying to find its way back, you know, to its original contract and stay the course. The restlessness, especially at night, you know. And I was wondering around what you were saying about leaders and the fact that, you know, no one would consider what leaders worry about or are conflicted about. Why, Chantal, is it so important for leaders to step into a place of choosing a healing journey? Why should leaders who are listening to this conversation, those that have not yet consciously and intentionally said, I need a shaman, I need someone who can see past everything I present on the outside, someone who I can confide my soul challenges to, you know, why should any leader take that step?
And that's the distinction. The distinction is that the challenges that leaders sit with, they're not a five sensory challenge. So when I speak about five sensory challenges, it's about your taste, touch, feel, the five senses. It's not a five sensory challenge that they actually deal with. They deal with a multi-sensory challenge. And so the pieces that keep them up at night is they will have an intuitive sense of what potential performance, outcome, access to achievement. They'll have a script about that. It's literally like they were born with that script. And the pieces that at a multi-sensory level one gets to feel, specifically in the leadership space, is when you are underperforming. Mm. And the underperforming does not necessarily equate to a five-sensory issue. The distinction is, I know, and I want us to hear that very carefully, I know that I was born to do more. I know that this is who I was born to be. That's the conversation that keeps leaders up at night. And so when leaders feel like they are not meeting that mark, or they're not on the journey towards that, or they have detoured in a way that they can't see their way back to that, those are the things that keep them up. And so when they get to the point where they say, I need counsel, and a particular kind of counsel, the counsel that can see beyond, that can understand that your challenges are not five sensory challenges, that your challenges are that of the soul. How do you work towards that? So they get to that point where they get to understand that's what they need, you know? And what is more frustrating for them, and I want us to speak a little bit about what frustration means, but what is more frustrating for them is when they have access to everything. They've got the money in the bank account. They've got access to whatever psychologist they need to be able, they can see, they, you know, they're speaking to the coach and those kinds of things. They have access to just about everything that says we'll be able to solution what your challenges are. That becomes a dark night of the soul for them, where they understand the access to that does not equate to what they actually need. So when leaders get to that point, they get to understand that this is not an intellectual process that they need to go through, that it's actually a how do I navigate the journey between the head, the heart, and the intuition? Mm. What does that look like? And I'm finding, specifically now in 2020, that so many leaders that thought they had a five-century problem are now going, actually, there's something else going on. Let me explore that.
I mean, you brought up 2020. That was going to be my next question. So we are seeing the world now an equal playing field, knowing that we are completely interconnected, both in front of our eyes and behind our eyes. But also we in this crisis of leadership, right? So we're looking at the world leaders, especially the big powers that basically run the global village. We're looking at the leaders and we're like, is this it? You know, and I'm someone, Chantal, you know, that I believe everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. I don't question the how things got to here, but more how do we move from this place, you know? And if I look at America, I look at in our country, in South Africa, I look abroad to England, to the Netherlands. Everywhere I look, I see this crisis in leadership. And this is not to say that I'm criticizing the leaders personally, but more so the capacity to do just that, to ask for counsel, when it's so obvious, I think, to the rest of the village that there is a crisis, you know. This should be the time where our leaders are going inward to that chaotic reflective plane that we spoke about in our other episode, you know, that field where you just sit in your own turmoil, your own chaos, and you deeply reflect around your own conditioning and your own ideas about what's right and wrong and what you are doing. What is your take on global leaders at this particular time?
The xenophobic perspective. It's one, it is such a deeply entrenched, I call it sits in the DNA. It's such a deeply entrenched blind spot. And I'm using blind spot as a, you know, as a neutral word. But it's such a deeply entrenched piece that leaders are now sitting. They've come face to face with that. And the extent of the xenophobic perspective, it ensures that we remain territorial. It ensures that we remain separate. It ensures that we do not need to take any other perspective into account. And what the COVID pandemic has shown us is that it raises the question around whether we have the privilege of maintaining that perspective. And so the work that I've been doing specifically with leaders during the pandemic has been around, what does your xenophobic perspective look like? And it doesn't matter. It could be someone sitting in Cape Town, South Africa, and Brussels, Belgium. All right? What is your xenophobic perspective? And we start there. And the pain and the trauma around being Afrocentric or Eurocentric is now at a point where we can no longer deny the pain. And so the journey that we've been walking, specifically with leaders within the context of the pandemic, is what do I need to do to put my weaponry down so that I can just consider something else? Because what COVID has done is it has allowed us to understand at some level, not at every level, but at some level, that there's an interconnectedness about who we are. We breathe the same air. So if something happens in China, it's going to have an impact on Cape Town in South Africa. Mm. And so we can no longer move away from the space of we don't breathe the same air. We're not in that space. It's been taken away. And that for me has been the fundamental piece around where do we start with leaders? Where do we start? And the place that has become so clear is around start with a xenophobic perspective.
So xenophobia, the definition of xenophobia, correct me if I'm wrong, is the fear of a person that doesn't come from the same country as you? Or does it go deeper than that?
Look, at an English definition level, that's what it is. But at an energetic level, it's around anything that is foreign to me.
Anything?
Anything that is foreign to me, like a virus, right? So when you get COVID, it's a virus. It's something that is foreign to your autoimmune system. That's what xenophobia is about. Anything that is foreign to me. And what we've seen with COVID is that you're either going to, at the beginning, the way that it was positioned, you're going to live or die. Then we're going to fight over resources. Are you going to be intubated? Will there be a machine for you? Right? So we fight over resources. But the narrative around xenophobia is anything that is foreign to me. And we will protect that with everything that we have.
That makes me think, you know, about the tribal language around superiority. So we always talk about the chakra system, you know, in the healing playing field. You talk about the chakra system and the first chakra, you know, is tribe. And if you do tribal work in your first chakra, those that are listening now, you're probably just giggling to yourself because what a journey that is in itself. But, you know, within that first chakra, within your tribal work, there comes a time when you have to question your own superiority and your own ideas around when do you feel superior to others, you know. And that you're just making me think about my tribal work around that. So when I believe that, you know, my, what is it, female, Cape Malay, queer, colored, Cape Townian, South African identity is better than somebody else's, or I have a certain amount of skills or certain amount of looks or something that makes me better than somebody else. And this question of resources is critical because when you get stripped down to your basic needs, you know, when your fear is engaged around whether you will survive or not, the superiority weapon is the first one we go for, right? I mean, it's the what do we call it? The battle of the fittest. What is it? The survival of the fittest.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, the battle for championship. It's gladiator. It's our rawest form of power. So why is it, though, that even on this global leadership platform, we are in our most simple, primal, shadow form? How did we get there?
Absolutely. You see, superiority stands on two legs. The one is protection and the other one is loyalty. Now, at a DNA level, we are born into blood. So you're born into your family, you're born into tribe, right? Now, what does that mean when you're born into blood? You're born into belief systems, belief patterns, codes, language, behavior. You're born into that. It's an unspoken script that everyone will know. It's like when you go to the party, this one gives you that look, you know exactly what that means. You go there, you know, we don't engage with these people because that's what that, right? So you're born into an unspoken contract at a tribal level. You will also understand that the two things that will be fundamental in maintaining is protection and loyalty. Now, when you have loyalty on the table, what that will mean is that you cannot choose something else. It means that your protection is directly proportionate to how loyal you actually are. At an energetic level, what that means is that you're running, if we just go into the chakra system, you're running your second chakra, which is your power base. You're running your energy system in a way that says everything in my energy system, so my decisions, the way I make my decisions, the way I dress myself, the way I think, the way that I contribute has to line up with my tribal beliefs. And so what that means is that everything else is off the table. Because if you engage anything other than that, your protection is gone. So the work that people are doing at this particular point, which is what you're asking, you're saying, how in 2020? How are we still here? Why have we become primal in the way that we engage 2020? It's because of that. Protection and loyalty is on the table. And if your survival is dependent on that too, then of course you're going to go there. Those that have stepped outside of that, so when you start moving again at an energetic level, when you start moving into your third chakra is about self-esteem and an identity about self. You know, when you start hitting that level and you're sitting in a tight tribe or a tight family, you're going to hit turbulence. Because nobody's going to like what you're saying. They're going to create an outcast of you in a split second. And it's because they believe that you are now disloyal to the tribe. And so third chakra work, in 2020 specifically, you're an outcast. And when you're sitting in a pandemic, nobody wants to be an outcast in a pandemic. You want to be able to call a friend. You know, you want to be able to say, can I use the ventilator, please? You know, so the confluence of energetics of COVID has brought us to this place.
Chantal, for the listeners at home or at work or in their car, some of you are in the bathroom right now, I believe, you know, wherever you may be listening to this, what would your advice, I don't like that word, but you know, for lack of a better word, what would your words be of encouragement for a time like this where we are grappling to move into that third chakra, really, to question, you know, our decisions around what we've aligned ourselves to, what does our loyalty mean, the issue of fearing what is foreign to me. These are the challenges of our global village at this time. And I think essential for us to unpack if we stand a chance against the tide that has so turned upon us. So for those listeners at home who may be well into their healing journey, who are somewhere along the path, who maybe have taken a detour, for those that haven't yet begun, but who are looking for the courage to begin, to ask for help, to look for the right counsel, to everyone who has remained so present with us during this episode around these topics, what would you say to them at this particular time?
Wissal, I think you would have also noticed that specifically during COVID, and this would be senior executives, CEOs, the organizations that have been able to gird themselves and continue through COVID has been where leaders have shown care. Care is a particular medicine. It separates cowards out from alchemists. And so that has been the one thing that has been, it's been like a sore thumb. You know, so when organizations coming, managing through COVID, they see that the leadership has not displayed any form of care. It has done something to the culture of the organization. So if we pull this back to the healing journey and we look at leaders in particular, the piece around asking for courage in a time where things are foreign to you, to me, asking for courage to be able to not anticipate, not to predict, not to try and fix, not to try and come up with a solution that is not of its time. Those people that have been in that space has understood that this is not a five-sensory problem. That we're not sitting in a situation where this can be fixed with a spreadsheet or this can be fixed with your bank account. They're starting to understand the place that healing will have within the context of their leadership. They're also starting to understand that their ability to see people beyond what they present, the ability to have the capacity to understand the unseen stuff, is what has galvanized their people. And so those that are in that place are the ones that can lead in a particular way and bring their people out on the other side. Those are the kinds of things that we are needing more of at this time.
So critical. I've also been a recipient of care, you know, in the last few weeks from your team. In a time when I really hadn't even known that I was drowning, you know. And as leaders, we quietly shrivel, you know. It's not something that we do out in the street, you know. It's in the company of yourself and with zero witnesses. And it has meant so much to be held by your team and to be seen that way. And I can only hope that the leaders listening to this conversation today are graced with the same kind of support in their lives, that they may find people like that on their path who, without wanting anything in return, are just able to care for them and encourage them to do the same, you know, for the reach of their vision, for those that are able to feel impacted by their vision. So thank you. Thank you, Chantal, for that critical piece around care. It's taken me 360 degrees, you know, in our interactions and also in this conversation.
Absolutely. The piece that I've come to understand as shaman is that, you know, so people go, so do you want to change the world? No, I don't want to change the world. However, because I can see, I have a responsibility to leave it in a better place. That, when you speak about care and feeling supported, when we see, there's a responsibility that we have to act on that. There's a responsibility that we have to be present to that. You speak about leaders when they're drowning and they shrivel up quietly. Other people will see it. And then they decide, oh, there's nothing that I can actually do about that, right? So as shaman, for me, it's about, I don't want to change the world, but I can see things. And my script is, when I see things, I have a responsibility to leave the world in a better place.
From your lips to God's ears.
Yes.
Chantal, thank you so much. It's been an utmost pleasure and honor. And to those listening at home, we are sitting in edible audio in Woodstock. Thank you to Daniel Ippel for this beautiful space, to Alex, who always helps us with tuning in our mics, the Institute of Applied Alchemy's team always by our side, Tristan, Anita, Jill, Beata, who's on her way from the airport. Thank you. Thank you to everyone. And please join us next time for Alchemy in Minutes.
Thank you, Issa.